Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's awesome to be here with you and to finally connect. We've been in touch with Pastor Xavier for a long time, setting up this Sunday, and it's so nice for me to be able to come to a place that believes so deeply in the ministry of compassion, and you're making a difference in the world. So thank you for the chance to come and share with you. This is my family, and you'll see there my beautiful wife and my three handsome sons. Very, very handsome. And they're all single, so sometimes people talk to me after the service, and we have a little conversation about that. So we have the privilege of connecting with a lot of churches around Canada. We used to actually live in Surrey, and now we're based out of Saskatchewan. And it's our privilege and our blessing to connect with people all over the country and help connect people to what their destiny is that God has called them to. And so this morning, I'd like to begin by talking about what it's like to grow up. Many of you probably don't know what it's like, perhaps, to grow up in small-town Canada. I grew up in a small town, and in the small town that I grew up in, people sometimes got bored. It's nothing to do, right? There's no, like, you can't go to the mall, you can't go see the Vancouver Canucks play hockey or other things like that. So people had to make up their own fun. And in a lot of small towns, this is what happened. People invented something called doing laps. Does anybody here know what doing laps is? Well, it's really fun. And what you do is you get into your car, it's a Friday or Saturday night, you roll down the windows and you crank up your music, and you drive around the town, around the three main blocks of the town, looking really cool. Drive around, and then you're back again in a minute because the town is that small. Then you go to the gas station and you fill up, and then you go around and you continue to look cool. You just wave at people, you do all kinds of waves, and you look cool as your music plays. But there was a guy in our town that took it to another level. And what he did was he bought a nice car, a 1969 Chevy Camaro with blue metallic paint. And he was so cool. When we saw this guy going by and we heard his amazing stereo and we saw his amazing blonde hair and his amazing big blonde mustache, we thought he was the coolest guy in the world. And he drove by looking so cool, and you would just hope that he would wave to you as he went by and smile at you with that nice blonde mustache. And he would go by, and then he'd be around in a minute again. And then he'd be back again. And what we realized is that even though we thought he was really cool at the time, we realized as we got older, wait a minute, he's just doing laps. He's just going around in circles. His life really isn't connected to anything that matters. And what he had done was, he had taken his cue from the culture around him. The culture around him said, this is what you do if you want to be awesome, if you want to do what matters. You do laps really well. And what we often do is we take our cue from the culture around us, and whatever the culture around us says is important, then that's what we do. So instead of doing that, what we want to do this morning is we want to have a reminder of what is important in the heart of Jesus, of what really matters, what is really eternal. We want to look at the priorities that Jesus has inside of his heart. That is what really matters. So will you do me a favor this morning? Go ahead and turn to someone beside you and smile at them and tell them, don't just do laps. So go ahead, tell someone beside you, don't just do laps. Don't just do laps. Thank you. So we want our lives to be about what matters to the heart of Jesus. So this morning, let's lean in close to Jesus' chest and let's just hear what his heartbeat is and what's important to him and what's eternal. So the first group of people we want to look at this morning are the lost. Let's read this out loud together. Luke 19, verse 10. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. So as we lean in close to the heart of Jesus, we will hear his heart beating the lost. And Jesus came so that lost people could find their way home to the Father and find out what their purpose in life is and find out how to be with Him for an eternity. Jesus wants people from every nation and tribe and tongue to come to know His healing, His salvation, His mercy, His goodness, His faithfulness, His kindness. He does not want anyone to stay in that state of being lost. I remember back to the days growing up in a non-Christian home. I remember what it was feeling like to be lost. And going to sleep at night, and when I closed my eyelids, I would just see blackness. And I imagined, is that what eternity is going to be like? Is it going to be that empty and that black? And I remember trying to find out what life was about, just trying to find out from maybe my peers or people that were older than me or my parents, and they, different people even in movies would say, this is how you find life. This is what life is all about. And we would try that thing, and we would end up feeling more empty after we tried it. It was actually quite horrible to be in that state of being lost. But Jesus came to seek and to save the lost so that we would find our way back home to the Father. I want to introduce you to this family. This is a family in Thailand that was lost. They did not know Jesus. Of course, they're growing up in a country where there's very few followers of Jesus at all, very little opportunity to come to know Jesus and to be found. But our family was able to sponsor the little girl who's sitting directly in front of her dad. And her nickname is Kat. And she was growing up in a family where they had no hope. In fact, they had no God in their belief system. They sometimes in their community, they would do things that were very desperate because they did not know really the value that we have as human beings. And people in their community would sometimes sell their children to be trafficked. And we make a lot of really destructive decisions sometimes when we're lost because we don't know really what our purpose is. She was growing up in this home. We were able to sponsor her. And she came to the Compassion Center, and she was hearing about the love and the kindness and the goodness of God. And so as a little girl, Kat received Jesus. And she was no longer lost, but she was found. And she started to grow in her faith, and she became a leader in that Compassion Center. And she learned how to play guitar, and she was leading worship for her peers. And she gained vocational skills and had help in all the different areas of her life. But when she graduated out of the program, we were surprised to get a letter from the director of her Compassion Center. And the director said, you might not have known this, but not only did Kat come to know Jesus, but also her whole family came to know Jesus. Found. Her whole family came to know Jesus because she came to know Jesus. And I want you to know that this is the norm in the ministry of compassion. Every 4 minutes, a child is coming to know Jesus through the ministry of compassion. Every 4 minutes, another child comes to know Jesus, found. And they've done a study and asked the question, does it affect the family members? And we found out that on average, another 4 family members also come to know Jesus, which is quite convenient in this example because there's exactly another 4 family members. On average, another 4 family members come to know Jesus when that child comes to know Jesus. So that means every minute there's someone who's found through the ministry of compassion. But none of that happens unless the people of God look at a lost person and say, you matter to Jesus. So you matter to me. You matter. Another group that's close to the heart of Jesus is the least. We read about them in Matthew chapter 25, verse 40. And let's read this out loud together. Will you join me? And the king will answer them, Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And in this passage, it's talking about Jesus coming back at the end of time. And he's looking at people's lives, and there's two different groups of people that are surprised. He says, you've both seen me. You've both seen Jesus. And they're asking, how did we see you? When did we see you? And Jesus says, you saw me when you saw the poorest of the poor, the most desperate of the desperate. You saw me. People who did not even have enough food to have enough nutrition to live properly, did not have enough food, water, did not have enough clothing. When you looked at them and you saw them, you didn't realize it, but you were actually in some mysterious way, you were looking at me, Jesus says. And whatever you did to them, if you cared about them, then you cared about me and I will reward you. And if you did not care about them, then that shows that you did not care about me, and so you will not be rewarded. And people in both groups are shocked and surprised that Jesus identifies with the people who are suffering so much that he calls them brothers and sisters. Those are my brothers and sisters, and when you look at them, I want you to see me, and I want you to care for them as though you're caring for me. The man in the middle here is named Everett Swanson. And Everett Swanson went to Korea to preach to the Korean troops during the Korean War. And as he was there, he found out that the situation in the nation was very desperate. As he was walking through the street, a little boy comes and steals his coat out of his hand and runs down the street around the corner. He chases him to find out what's going on. And he comes around the corner and he finds there's his jacket and there's a lump under his jacket. And guess what's under the jacket? The little boy. And he's just trying to stay warm. And he found out that in the streets there was thousands of abandoned children. And thousands and thousands and thousands. So much so that they had a real problem. And every day, sanitation workers go out into the streets and they're kicking piles of garbage and newspapers and rags. And some of the piles, they're picking up. And some of the piles of garbage, they're just leaving. And he asked someone, what's going on in your country? What's happening here? Why are they leaving some of those piles of garbage? And he was told, when they come to those piles of garbage and they kick the piles, and if they kick the pile and there's movement under the pile of garbage, then they know there's a child who survived through the night. They were warm enough. They had enough food. They're alive for one more day. And when they would come to a pile and they'd kick the pile and there's no movement in that pile, then they're picking up the garbage and the child that's under it, throwing it, the child and the garbage, onto the back of a flatbed garbage truck and hauling them away like garbage. And this man is flying back home, and he's not okay with what he's seen. And he hears God speaking to him in the rhythm of those old plane engines, and God is saying to him, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? So he goes home, he gathers some friends together who became the very first sponsors of children in the Ministry of Compassion. And they sponsored these children. But fast forward many years later, the church in Korea becomes very powerful. The economy starts to improve in Korea, and Compassion is able to leave Korea because the church is able to take care of the least of these in their own country. But as they're leaving, the leaders of the Korean church say, you'll be back in Korea, and we will be helping the least of these in other countries. You're going to be back. A few years later, Compassion is back, and they're reintroducing Compassion into that country. And the president of Compassion is there. He's giving an amazing speech just like this one. That's supposed to be a joke. So he's giving an amazing speech, and there's someone over on this side who's waving and interrupting him, trying to get his attention. And he says, it looks like you have something to say. And the man stands up and says, you don't need to tell us about compassion. We are your children. And all over the room, men and women start standing up saying, I'm your son, I'm your daughter, because they were sponsored with compassion. They were the little boys and girls who were just trying to stay warm enough to get through another night. And now they're leaders in the church, leaders in their denomination, leaders in business, leaders in education, leaders in healthcare. And what God had done is he had seen the least of these in that country, and he said, I'm going to transform this nation through them. And what I need is someone to look at them and see that they matter and make an investment in them. I need someone to say to them, you matter to Jesus, so you matter to me. So this morning, let's lean in close to the heart of Jesus, and we'll hear his heart beating for the least, the least, the least. And may that same heartbeat be our heartbeat. The lost are in the heart of Jesus, the least, and the last group we want to look at this morning are the littlest. Did you know that little people have a very special place in the heart of Jesus? They have a very special place in his plan because they are open to the kingdom of God, and they are of strategic importance to him in his plan. Matthew chapter 19, then children were brought to him that he might lay his hands on them and pray. The disciples rebuked the people, but Jesus said, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them and went away. So he has to teach his disciples a lesson. Disciples, you think you need to get me to where the important people are, and you think that these kids are an interruption, but I want you to know that your job as disciples is to make the way as clear as possible so little people can come to me. That's your job. Let's make this really simple. All you have to do is make it really easy for little people to come to me. They are so important to me. They are not interruptions. They are an important part of my plan to see my kingdom and my glory spread throughout the whole earth. So the disciples had to get their thinking changed from upside down to right side up and realize how close little people are to the heart of Jesus. And then in Matthew chapter 18, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. So he's saying when we create a space where there's protection and welcome and an opportunity for that child to be safe and to grow and to come to Jesus, it's as though we're welcoming, we're making room for Jesus himself, and we'll get rewarded. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it'd be better for him to have something large like that piano tied around their neck and for them to be thrown into False Creek. He doesn't say that in the Greek, but he's using really strong language, isn't he? He's saying, if someone brings harm to a child, I care about that, I see that, I'm going to do something about that. And it shows us how important children and young people are to Jesus. He sees it and he wants them cared for. He wants them protected. This is a photo of Jonathan. You can see him in the middle there with his big Dominican smile and his nice Dominican beard. We met Jonathan when he was in his 20s. He's working for Compassion in the Dominican Republic, and he has such a passion and a heart to see more and more and more children sponsored with Compassion, and not just looking at the outside at the Compassion centers through the windows wondering why is there so much joy and love in there, but they're on the inside. And he's telling us about his story when we met him. He said, when I was 7 years old, my mom would send me out into the streets every day to sell little bags of juice, and if I sold enough of those bags of juice, then we would have food to eat at night. Is there any children here who are 7 years old? Just so we can get a little reference. Or even like 6 or 7 or 8. Do we have anyone in that range? Oh, okay. So when he was big like you guys, He had to get sent out just to go out in the street, just to sell things so that they could eat. He's living in a neighborhood where it feels like a prison because no one gets out of those neighborhoods where there's extreme poverty. It just cycles through to the next generation and the next one. And he's every day experiencing that, like no one ever feels like they could ever get out. Not only that, he was actually rejected by his father. Jonathan was a secret. He was born secretly because a man had a family, and then he secretly had Jonathan with another woman. And when the family found out about the secret that was Jonathan, the father came to him and said, "Jonathan, I never want to see you again. You were a mistake." And so he's going home with all this heaviness on him, all these different messages that are spoken to him. But he arrives at home and he reads a letter that he had just got from his compassion sponsor. And his sponsor said, "Jonathan, today I was thinking of all the things I'm grateful for, and I want you to know I'm grateful for you." And he started to have a different message spoken into his life. And he went to the compassion center and he found that there was people who cared for him, but he also found out that God cared for him. And he started to believe what they were saying to him every day, that God could see him, that God knew him, that God could change his situation, that God had given him gifts and talents and abilities that he'd given no one else in the world, and that he was a difference maker. And so as a little boy, he starts walking around his neighborhood in a different way. He's puffing out his chest, and he's walking through the neighborhood like he owns the neighborhood, like he knows God can do something here. He can change this. He's got fire in his eyes. He knows that God is with him, and God is at work. So when we meet Jonathan a little later, when he's in his 20s, all of his friends are gathered around, and they say, "We want you to meet Jonathan, and we know something's going on." And we're just walking up to him, and all of his friends are around, and they're just watching us, and they say, "You have to meet Jonathan." And we reach out to shake his hand, and as we reach out to shake his hand, they say, "This is our friend Jonathan, and he is going to be the president of the Dominican Republic." And we're like, "What's going on around here?" And they said, "Maybe you didn't hear us. Our friend Jonathan is going to be the president of the Dominican Republic." And that was his campaign team around us, all of his friends. He's running to be a senator in the year 2020, and he believes that God is calling him to bring transformation on a national level as a Christian leader in that country. He started to see himself differently and see that he mattered. But it took someone looking at a little Jonathan before he's running to be senator or president, and just looking at him and saying, "You matter to Jesus, so you matter to me. I'm going to make an investment into your life." And the reason why we love compassion so much is that it helps us to care for the lost, the least, and the littlest. So over 80% of the children that come into the compassion centers are coming from non-Christian families. So they're the lost. Over 80% that come in are coming from families that make less than $2 a day. They're the least. And of course, they're the littlest, because compassion is working with children from birth right through to the age of 21. And when we know that when we're sponsoring a child with compassion, when you see these sponsorship forms on the table at the back and downstairs, you know that those children are all of those things. And that the Ministry of Compassion is helping us to care for the lost, the least, and the littlest. Before we have a video that shows the impact that you make when you sponsor a child with compassion, I want to just show you the four things that make compassion unique. I think you've heard these before, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. Compassion is Christ-centered. Compassion is Christ-centered. Compassion is child-focused. Do you remember these? The things that make compassion unique, you might have heard them before. Christ-centered, child-focused, church-based. Everything that compassion does is done through a local church, just like yours. So in 5 years, they're still there. In 25 years, they're still there. And finally, compassion is committed to financial integrity and is ranked as one of the top charities in the world for financial integrity. I want to show you this video before we wrap up, and this just walks us through a few stories of alumni that have gone through the Compassion program and the amazing impact that it's having, so that you can see that when you sponsor a child with compassion, you're making a huge difference. So if we're ready to roll that video, let's go ahead.